So we're on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph at the second line of the Gemara. So this is just wrapping up the topic we were discussing yesterday. Where it says Tashma Simpon Sheyesh Alav Eidim Kasher. Remember yesterday we were discussing extensively this idea of a simpon, of a debt of cancellation, this receipt, and we were trying to figure out, is it even possible that a malveh has a simpon in his possession? So this brisa seems to indicate that it is possible, because it says if a simpon has eidim, then it's kasher. It doesn't make any distinctions between whether the simpon is in the possession of the lover, the malveh. So the Gemara says no, my eidim eidei kiyum. It just means the eidim who ratified the shtar. Hachinami mistabra midikatani seifa v'she'ein alav edim pasol my ein alav edim ilema deleka ilave edim klal tzricha lemeimar defasol el alav edikim. It has to be, says the Gemara, that the pshat in that brisa is that the shtar has edikim, has edim who ratified the shtar. Because if you try to read it any other way, what you're going to come with the absurd conclusion is that the Gemara is telling us that a shtar that doesn't have any edim signed on the bottom is possible. Of course it's possible. If you don't have edim signed on a shtar, it's just a worthless piece of paper. So obviously it's going to be puzzle. So therefore the Gemara says it must mean that the Braisa is talking about Eidei Kiyum, Eidim who ratify the strike. Okay, finally, the Gemara says Gufa, Simpon Sheyesh Alav Eidim Yiskayim Bechosmav, Ein Alav Eidim V'yotzei Mitachas Yidei Shlish O Sheyotzei La'achar Chitum Shtaros Kasher. So the Gemara again harkens back to something we mentioned briefly yesterday, which is that if the bill of cancellation has Eidim signed on the bottom, you certify that Shtar via the signatories. Either you go directly to the Eidim themselves if they're still alive, or you find someone else who can corroborate the signatures. However, if you don't have any signatures or any Eidim signed on the bottom, so either you have one of two options. Either if the Simpon is coming from a third party, let's say the Malveh handed over the Simpon to Levi, to the third party, or the Simpon itself was written after the Shtar was already signed. In both of those cases, the Simpon is kosher. What's the idea there? So the Gemara explains, Yotzei mitachas yidei shlish dehahem ne malveh l'shlish. So obviously, the fact that the Malveh handed the Simpon to a third party means that he trusts the third party. So if the third party, if Levi is producing the Simpon, that means that Reuven the Malveh trusts him. And then also the Gemara says, Yotzei la'achar chitim shtaros nami de'ilav defriya lo hava mara le'lishtare. And the Gemara says, similarly, in the case of a simpon which emerges after the shtar was signed, so the simpon is essentially being written on the shtar itself. You have a shtar that says, Reuven lent Shimon $1,000, and you have Eidim signed off on it, and then underneath you write, by the way, Shimon paid up his debt. So there's no way that you would ever write that unless it was true, unless Shimon really paid up his debt, because otherwise you're effectively undermining the credibility of the shtar. Okay, Hadron Alach, Shnai Moksa. Moving on to a very famous parak. Elu Metzio Shalo, Ve'elu Chayev Lahachriz. The following items that a person finds he can keep for himself, and other items he has to announce. Elu Metzio Shalo, Matzah Peros Mefuzarin, Maos Mefuzaros, Krichos Virishos Harabim, Ve'igule Devela, Kikaro Shal Nachtom, Machruzo Shal Dagim, Bachaticho Shal Basar, Ve'gize Tzemer Halakuchen, Mimidinasan, Va'anitze Pishton, Ulushonos Shal Argaman, Hare Elu Shalo Devir Amir. Amir rattles off a whole bunch of items, and the common denominator between all these items is that they don't have any kind of a simon. There's no sign, there's no marking on this that makes this item stand out as unique. So if you find any of these items, whether it's scattered fruit or scattered money or bundles of grain in the Rishus HaRabim or round cakes of pressed figs or baker's loaves or strings of fish or cuts of meat or pieces of wool that have not been processed yet or stalks of flax or any of these things, tongues of wool, so you're allowed to keep them because they don't have any identifying markers on them. Reb Yehuda Omer, Kol Sheyesh Bo Shinui Chayav Lahachris, Ketzad, Matza Agolu V'socho Cheres, Kikaru v'socho mos. However, Rabbi Yehuda adds a caveat, which is that even if you find a relatively commonplace item, but if the item itself has some kind of a shinui with the item, so for example, you find a round cake of pressed figs with a piece of pottery inside, or you find a loaf of bread with money inside, that is considered a valid simon by which the person who lost the item can identify it. And then finally, the Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Kol klei arpuria ein chayev lahachris. The Gemara is going to explain what this term means. But basically, any sort of a new kli, a kli that hasn't had any sort of, in other words, it doesn't have any character or any patina to it. It's brand new off the shelf. So then also, you're not chayev to announce it because there is no way to identify. Okay, so now the Gemara asks, matzah perus mefuzarin v'chama. When the Mishnah talks about that a person who finds scattered fruit is allowed to keep the fruit, what's the definition of scattered? How do I know if the fruit that I find is considered scattered? Amar Rav Yitzchak, kav ba'arba amos. It means that I find a kava fruit within a span of four amos, that's considered scatter. So the Gemara clarifies. Heichi dami. I derech nefila afilu tuvanami. The I derech inuach afilu batzer mehachinami lo. The Gemara says, if the fruit is derech nefila, in other words, it's just lying all over the place, so that even if the ratio is more than one kav, let's say I found two kav in four amos, but it's scattered all over the place, so then I should be able to keep that too, because there's no identifying marker. It's not like the fruit was stacked in a certain way or was placed in a certain way. On the other hand, if it's derech inuach, if the fruit is clearly placed, in other words, it's not just that, you know, there's a bunch of apples rolling around. It's clear that some guy, you know, spent the time to stack the apples or the fruit in a specific way. So then even if the ratio is less than one kav to four amos, I also should not be allowed to keep that. I should have to announce that. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Rav Ukva bar Chama, b'machnashta de dari askinan. So comes Rav Ukva and says, the case in the Mishnah of peiros mifuzarin, of scattered fruit, was only referring to this one scenario of kernels of grain that were left on the threshing floor. And we'll talk about this more on the next Amud, but basically the owner essentially purposely left those kernels of grain on the threshing floor, and he essentially gave up on ever getting them back. So in that scenario, we say that if you find the scattered grain on the threshing floor, then you're allowed to keep it. So the Gemara clarifies. Kav ba'arba amos bin nafesh tirchayu lo tarachinish v'lo hadar So the Gemara clarifies that the reason why this ratio of one kav and four amos is the barometer to say that you're allowed to keep it, but anything short of that you're not, is basically because it revolves around the issue of tircha, meaning it's considered too much of a pain in the neck for a person to go and walk over four amos and pick up a kav of fruit. So if you have a ratio of a kav of fruit spread out over four amos, that's too much of a tircha for the guy to go back and reclaim his fruit, and he's essentially given up on ever getting the fruit back. He was mafkir the fruit. However, if the ratio is less than, let's say you only found whatever it was, you found a half a kav, so now, because the ratio is less, it's much less of a tircha. The assumption is that the person who lost it was not mafkirin, and therefore you're going to have to return it. So now the Gemara is going to ask a whole bunch of questions that are essentially corollaries of this statement.
What is the shipment on that fruit that you have to return it? I mean, I thought one of the things we're talking about is these things have to have a shipment on it. Does an apple have a similar?
Well, the apple itself doesn't necessarily have a similar, but as we already explained in the Gemara a second ago, the way in which the fruit was placed or not placed could itself be a simon, right? If the guy went ahead and stacked...
I thought this was scattered stuff.
So that was part of the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question was, what's the scenario of scattered fruit? We said, if fruit is literally scattered, it's derech nefila, so then the ratio even more should be allowed to keep. And if it's derech inuach, if it seems to have been intentionally placed there, so then you should be able, in other words, then you shouldn't be able to keep anything. So the Gemara ended up saying, no, we're talking about a case of the threshing floor, where we found the kernels of grain on the threshing floor. And then the Gemara came and clarified that the reason why we're presenting this barometer of kav and arba amos is because it revolves around the question of tircha, meaning it's considered to be a pain in the neck to gather a kav and arba amos, so therefore the owner essentially gave up on it. He said, you know what, forget about it, it's too much of a pain to go back and reclaim those apples that I dropped if it's less than that amount. So that, in other words, the idea is that, again, we're going to talk about this on the next Amud a lot, but the idea is that you still have to announce it because he hasn't given up on the item yet. So the Gemara says, "Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah, chatzi kav v'shtei amos mahu, kav ba'arba amos taima mai mishum de nafesh tirchayu, chatzi kav v'shtei amos kevin de lo nafesh tirchayu lo mafkir lehu, o dilma mishum de lo chashivei, v'chatzi kav v'shtei amos kevin de lo chashivei mafkir lehu, kabayim mishmona amos mahu, kav ba'arba amos taima mai mishum de nafesh tirchayu, v'chol shekin kabayim mishmona amos kevin de nafesh tirchayu tvei mafkir lehu, o dilma mishum de lo chashivei, v'kabayim mishmona amos kevin de chashivei lo mafkir lehu." So these two questions are essentially corollaries of one another. The first is, what if I find a half a kav in two amos, or what if I find two kav in eight amos? So it's essentially either doubling the proportion or halving the proportion. The idea is, again, it's the same side of the question. Either the issue is tircha. If it's a tircha issue, so then two kav in eight amos is much more of a tircha than one in four, so I certainly can keep it, whereas a half a kav in two is much less, so I have to return it. On the other hand, if the question is about chashivas, what's considered to be valuable, so a half a kav is not really considered to be worth that much, so I could keep it, but two kav is certainly considered to be worth a lot, so I don't have to announce it. So those are the two possibilities. And the Gemara has another corollary of this. Kav shum shemin ba'arba amos ma'u. Kav ba'arba amos taimamai mishum delo chashivayim. Mishum Shimon Kevin da Chashivei lo mafkir lehu. Odilma Mishum de Nafish Tirchayu v'chol shkein Mishum Shimon Kevin de Nafish Tirchayu tfei mafkir lehu. Kav Tamri barba amus kav Rimoni barba amus mahu. Kav barba amus taim amai Mishum de lo Chashivei. Kav Tamri barba amus kav Rimoni barba amus nami Kevin de lo Chashivei mafkir lehu. Odilma Mishum de Nafisha Tirchayu v'kav Tamri barba amus kav Rimoni barba amus Kevin de lo Nafish Tirchayu lo mafkir lehu. Mai teku. So the Gemara again raises two other questions. Again, conceptually, it's basically the exact same as the previous two, where either you find the kav of sesame seeds in four amos, or you found a kav of dates and pomegranates in four amos. So on the one hand, sesame seeds are worth a lot of money, but on the other hand, they're also very small and very, very difficult to pick up. And on the other hand, dates and pomegranates are not worth as much, but they're much easier to pick up. So again, it's the same questions, the same shayla on both ends. And again, the Gemara leaves all of these questions unresolved with a take. Okay, then the Gemara says, Itmar. Yir shalom midas. Abai yamar lo havi yish, the rava amar havi yish. B'davar sheyesh bo simen kulei amalo pligi de lo havi yish, the yafa gav de shamine de miyayish lesov, lo havi yish, de chi asa liyadei bi isura hu da asa liyadei, de lichi yada de nafa mine lo miyayish, meymar amar simana isli begavei, yahav da simana vishakil nalei, bezuto shal yamu vishluli so shal nahar, afa gav de ispe simen rachamana sharye ki devaina le meymar lekaman, ki pligi b'davar sheyin bo simen, abai yamar lo havi yish, de halo yada de nafa mine, rava amar havi yish, the lechiyada the nafal mi nemi yayish may maramar simana leisli begavei may hashtehu demi yayish. This is perhaps one of the most famous machlokes in all of Shas. This is actually one of the Yal Kagams, one of the six times that we pass in like a baye over Rava. This is the first example. This is the yud of Yal Kagam. Yud shalom midas. Right, every kid who ever went to fifth grade probably learned this gemara. It's like the first gemara that you learn when you go to elementary school. Yud shalom midas is the question of a guy loses an item. He does not yet know that he lost the item, but once he finds out, he's certainly going to give up on ever getting that item back. So the question is, I found the item before he realized that he lost it. So that's called Yush Shalom Midas. The question is that called Yush? So before we get to all the different proofs back and forth, the Gemara says, this is a machlokas between Abai and Rav. Abai says that it's not called Yush, meaning to say, I still have to return the item, because at the time that he lost it, he didn't realize, he never gave up on it. And Rav disagrees and says, no, that is called Yush. Now, the Gemara clarifies the parameters of this machlokas. The Gemara says, first of all, if we're dealing with an item that has a simon on it, so that's a whole different story. Then everyone agrees that you're going to have to announce it, even if it was after the guy already realized that he lost the item. On the other hand, the Gemara says, let's say this was an item that had a simon, but it got swept up by the ocean, by the river. So that even if it has a simon on it, so the guy clearly gave up on ever getting that item back, so then you're allowed to keep it, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain. The machlokas is only regarding an item which does not have a simon. So according to Abaye, he says that that's not called yush, because at the time that I found the item, he did not know, the guy who lost the item didn't know that he had get lost it, and Rava disagrees. Rava says, no, because eventually he's going to figure out that he lost it, he's just going to give up hope of ever getting the item back, and therefore, I'm allowed to keep it. So now, for the rest of today's... So all of these issues, all of these questions, all these issues are going to come into play on today and tomorrow's daf. We're going to spend the rest of today's daf and going into tomorrow's daf, quoting 10 different proofs back and forth to try and figure out which of these positions of Abai and Rav is correct, and we're going to have to try and show, you know, and try and refute each of the positions and each of the proofs that the Gemara is going to quote. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tashma, Peros Mifuzarin, Halo Yada Denafamine. The first example from our Mishnah was scattered fruit. The Mishnah said that if I find scattered fruit, I'm allowed to keep it. So isn't that a proof to Rava? Because the guy who dropped the fruit doesn't know that he lost the fruit. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a raya. Ha'amar Rav Ukva Bar Chama, Hacha B'machnash to the Vizrei Askina, David Amidas. We already explained in the previous Amud that scenario in the Mishnah was referring to the kernels of grain that the guy purposely left on the threshing floor. That's not called Yir Shalom Midas, that's an Aved Amidas. He left the items there intentionally. He purposely left the kernels of grain there, and therefore, in that scenario, that's the only reason why you're allowed to keep it. And the Gemara tries again. Tashma, Maus Mifuzaros Hare Ilu Shalom Amai, Halo Yada Denafamine. What about the case of the scattered money? The guy also, you know, doesn't know that he lost the money, and you're allowed to keep it. So isn't that a raya to Rava? So again, the Gemara says no. Hasam nami kidder Rav Yitzchak de Amar Adam Asri Lamashmish Bechiso Bechal Shav Shah. Hachanami Adam Asri Lamashmish Bechiso Bechal Shav Shah. It's a very famous statement of Rav Yitzchak. We actually quoted this at the very end above a comma. It's going to come up again a few times on this daf. Rav Yitzchak says that a person always checks their pockets. People know the second they lose money. So if a guy dropped money out of his wallet, he's going to find out about it a few seconds later, and therefore there really is no daylight. There's no lapse of time between the time he loses the item and the time that you find it. Okay, then where it says Tashma, Igule Devela Vechikaro Shal Nachtam Hare Elu Shalo Amai Vehalo Yada Denafaline. What about the case of the round cake of pressed figs and the loaves of bread of a baker? The Mishnah said you can keep those. Why are you allowed to keep those? The guy doesn't know that he dropped those items. Isn't that a riot to Rava? So again, the Gemara says no. They're very heavy. The cake is heavy. The bread is heavy. So the guy knows right away once he drops it. Tashma uleshonos shelar gamar hare elu shalov yamai halo yada denafam in it. What about the strips or the tongues of purple wool? So also the Mishnah said you can keep those, but why? The guy doesn't know that he dropped it. Isn't that a raya to Rava? So again, the Gemara says no. Hasam nami agav dachashive mishmushim emashmish behuuchad Rabbi Yitzchak, because the purple wool is very expensive. And again, as we just pointed out a second ago, people always check their pockets. People always know when their expensive items are lost. So the guy's going to know right away that he lost the item. So this is not a case of yishalomidas. The Gemara says Tashma hamotze maos bevate kinesios uvebate medrashos uvechol makom shaharabim etsuyin sham. So conceptually, it's very, very similar to the earlier cases. Here, the guy found money inside of a shul or inside of a base mattress or any really public area. So the Brisa tells us that you can keep that money. Why? Because the owner certainly gave up of ever getting that money back. But again, he doesn't know that he lost the money. So again, the Gemara says no. That's the original context of the statement of Rabbi Yitzchak, that people always check their pockets and they know the minute that they lose their money. Okay, the Gemara says Tashma. Me emasai kol adam mutarim bileket misheyelchu bahanemushos. The Amrinan mynemushos. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan save da azle atigra reish lakish amar likute basar likute. So comes the Gemara and quotes a Mishnah at the end of Maseches Peah. The Mishnah in Peah is discussing at what point is it permissible for a person that's not an ani to go and collect leket. Right? Leket, we know, are the gleanings that fall off of the tree after a person is harvesting various crops. Normally, leket is reserved only for aniyim. However, the Mishnah in Peah says at a certain point, once the aniyim have combed through the field, they've taken everything that could have been taken. So now, regular people can also walk through the field and see if they can, you know, scavenge or scrounge for those last scraps that were somehow missed. So the question is, at what point do we allow regular people who are not aniyim to go through the field and to collect the leket? So the Mishnah in Peah says, Misheyelchu bahanemushos. Once the rummagers have gone through the field, then you can go. So the question is, who are these rummagers? So Rabbi Yochanan says it refers to the elderly people who walk with a cane. They rely on a cane for support. They literally, you know, use the cane and they pick over every single rock, every single whatever, to find every last piece of grain in the field. Rish Lakish says, Likute basar likute. It means that it's like the second wave of aniyim who came after the first one. The first guys went through, they took all the gleanings. The second guys come through, they take all the gleanings. So then at that point, then you can go in and see if you can find what's left, because the odds are there's probably nothing left in the field. So the Gemara says, hang on a second. Ve'amai nehida aniyim dehaka miyashe, ika aniyim beduchta acharita delo miyashe. How are you allowed to keep the leket after the various groups or rummagers or the people with the canes have gone through the field? The problem is, granted that the aniyim who live here maybe have given up hope of finding any more leket, but what about all the other aniyim from all the other places in the world, from all the other cities in the world? They, in other words, they've never given up. So, in other words, how do you have the right to go in and take the leket? The fact that you're allowed to take the leket, isn't that a raya to Rava that we assume that Yish Shalom Midas is in fact Yish? So the Gemara says, oh, that's not a raya. Amre, kevan de'ika aniyim hacham, hanach me'ikara iayushe miyayish, ve'amre aniyim dehasam melakte. Like, no. The aniyim in the other locations just assume that the aniyim from here are going to find everything. So the aniyim from all the other places have already given up. They've already, you know, in other words, they said there's no way we're going to find anything in this guy's field because there's already, you know, there's already 100 aniyim who have scavenged the field. There's no way that there's anything left. That's the reason why a regular guy can go and keep the leket, because effectively all the aniyim in the world have given up hope of ever finding anything. Okay, Nigmar says Tashma. Kitzios baderech, va'afilu bitzad stei kitzios, v'chein te'ena hanote laderech, u'matza te'enim tachteha, mutarus mishum gezel, ufturos men ha'maiser, bezesim uvecharuvim asir. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah that appears in Maseches Maiseros. The Mishnah in Maiseros makes the following distinction. Let's say you have dried figs on the road, or even if you're next to a field where there are figs being laid out to dry, or you have a fig tree where the branches are overhanging the public area, and then you find figs underneath those trees or underneath or by the field. So there's no issue of gezel. You're allowed to keep the figs. There's no concern that you're stealing it. And in addition to that, they're also exempt from Meiser. You don't have to separate Meiser from those figs. However, if it's an olive tree or a carob tree, so then they're usher. So then you're not allowed to take the olives or the carobs. So the Gemara explains. Bishlama Risha La Abaye Lo Kashya Agav Dachashive Mimashmish Behu Te'ena Nami Meida Yediya Dinasra Ela Seifa La Rav Akashya Dikatani Bezesimu Vecharu the Maser. So the Gemara says like this. I understand the Risha, the first half of this mission in Meiser, according to Abaye. Because the first half of the Mishnah says that when I have figs that are overhanging the path, or they're drying out on the field, that I'm allowed to keep them. There's no issue of gezel. There's no chiyuv of meiser. So that makes sense, even according to Abaye, who normally says the yush alomidas is not considered yush. Abaye will just explain that when it comes to figs, so first of all, the figs are, or at least the dried figs are chashuv. They're valuable, so people know about them. And he's always, in other words, as we already mentioned several times, a person knows when he loses a valuable item. And also in the case of the regular figs, well, once, in other words, people know once their figs fall off the tree. So it's not really called Yerushalomi Das. But the question is, what about the latter case? The Mishnah in Maaseh also told us that Bezesim Uvecharuvim Aser, that when it comes to olive trees or carob trees, that you're not allowed to take the olives and the carobs that were strewn around by the tree. Presumably that would be an issue of Gezela. But the question is, why is that true according to Rava? According to Rava, who says Yerushalomi Das is considered to be Yish, I should be allowed to keep not just the figs, but also the olives and the carobs. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Rabbi Avahu, shiny zayis, hovil vachazuso mochiach alav. The afal gav de nasrin, zeisei meida yedia, duchta de inish inishu. The Gemara is a very, very strange answer here, which basically is that there's something unique about olives, that somehow by looking at an olive, you can tell this olive belongs to Reuven. Olives somehow have an identifying feature about them that even once they've fallen off of the tree or the olive grove, I can say, I know this is Reuven's olive. It has some sort of a mark on it. So, in other words, essentially what the Gemara is saying is that olives themselves are never going to be subject to the idea of Yush, because by definition, you're always going to know who the olive belongs to. So the question is, hang on a second, Nihachi afilu reisha nami. So then, why is the reisha any different? Why is the case of figs different? So people don't know about figs, people don't know who the figs belong to. So the Gemara says, Amar of Papa, te'ena im nifilas in the messages. So Rav Papa basically says that when it comes to figs, when figs fall on the ground, they become disgusting and inedible. No one's going to want them anymore. So essentially, at that point, everyone's given up on them, and therefore you're allowed to keep them. Okay, then finally, the Gemara says, Tashma, Hagana shenatal mizev in nasan lazeh, v'chein gazlon shenatal mizev in nasan lazeh, v'chein yardin shenatal mizev in nasan lazeh, ma shenatal natalu ma shenasan nasan. So this is a Mishnah, actually this is really a Tosefta that appears in Maseches Ksubis. We discussed it a little bit also back in Bava Kama, that talks about the following case. Let's say, basically, you have someone who steals an item from someone and then gives it to someone else. So he's basically Robin Hood. So Shimon steals from Reuven and gives it to Levi, whether he's a ganav or a gazlon, or even if it's not a person. Let's say the Jordan River, just any sea, it swept up Reuven's item and it deposited the item into Shimon's field. So the Gemara tells us that which was taken, and that which was given, which is essentially a fancy way of saying that there's no liability here. There's nothing, in other words, Shimon is not responsible now to pay back Reuven. So the Gemara explains, Bishlama gazlan viyardain de kachazi lehu umiyayesh elaganav mi kachazi le de miyayesh. The Gemara says, I understand the case of the gazlan and the yardain, because the gazlan, as we've discussed many times in the past, the difference between a ganav and a gazlan is that a gazlan steals in the open, a ganav steals surreptitiously. So a gazlan, I see the guy in broad daylight stealing from me, or the yardain, I see the river coming and sweeping my item away, so I'm giving up on ever getting the item back. So that makes sense why the recipient of either the stolen item or the item that got swept away by the river is allowed to keep it, because I gave up. But a guy who breaks into your house in the middle of the night, you never knew that the item was stolen. You never knew that the item was lost or it was taken, so you never gave up on it. So the fact that the recipient of the item that was taken by the ganav is allowed to keep it would seem to lend support to Rava that Yush Shalomi Das is in fact Yush. To which the Gemara says, no, Tirgama Rav Papa, Belistim Mizuyan. Rav Papa says, no, that the case of ganav is not the guy who breaks in the middle of the night. It's the guy who breaks in armed. In other words, you have an armed robber who comes and sticks you up at gunpoint and says, give me your whatever. So the Gemara says, hang on a second, Yihachi Hainu Gazlan. How is that different than a Gazlan? In other words, the whole point of distinguishing between a ganav and a Gazlan is to say that the ganav does it surreptitiously and the Gazlan does it in the open. So an armed robber is conceptually speaking the same as a Gazlan. So the Gemara says, you're right, Trey Gavne Gazlan. There's essentially two categories of Gazlan. So in other words, at the end of this part of the Gemara, what the Gemara is essentially saying is that, in other words, a regular ganav, a guy who actually just breaks into your house in the middle of the night, not as an armed robber, so in that scenario, if he were to steal an item from you and give it to someone else, so the other guy would not acquire the item because you didn't know about it. So this is not a dispositive proof to Rava. So again, we're going to tomorrow hopefully finish up the rest of